Blog Talk Radio.
This is Getting It Done, and I'm your host, Dr. Walter Dean. It's important to note that the killing of one black man named George Floyd took place in Minnesota, and the Democrats have nominated Joe Biden, and he has on his list of vice presidents a candidate who is from Minnesota. Her name is Amy Klobuchar, who ran for the presidency, so she has the possibility of being his running mate. So what we can find out about her becomes very important, because we know that Joe is up in age, and God forbid, if he is elected, anything happens to him, she will then become president, and we don't know that much about her. Or maybe we do. But before we find out, I'd like to tell you a little bit about a friend of mine who is, we're going to be advertising one of his discs. It's called the Paul Willis Band CD, and the album is called Heart Shines. It has a number of tunes on it, all written by Mr. Willis, arranged by Mr. Willis. He sings on the disc also. There is a guest vocalist, and his name is Walter Dean. I guess I know who that person is. That happens to be me. The disc costs $15, all of you out there. It's an opportunity to listen to the works of a genius. His email address is pcwilusc@gmail.com. When you do, look that up. Give him a phone number and an email address. Now, back to the story about a possibility of a running mate for the president, the person who might become president of the United States, Amy Klobuchar. Let's listen.
I have to talk about how Amy Klobuchar played a direct role in the emerging George Floyd story coming out of Minnesota, coming out of Minneapolis. For those who don't know, the police officer, Derek Chauvin, that took George Floyd's life has a long history of questionable, at best, actions as a police officer. And Amy Klobuchar, before she was a Democratic senator, was a prosecutor in Minnesota, in that state. She was one of the top legal officials in that state. And during that time, she failed to hold Derek Chauvin accountable and people like Derek Chauvin accountable. And at least in part, what happened to George Floyd is on Amy Klobuchar and people like her. This report, I'm going to read just a brief clip here, is from The Guardian, a reputable source talking about Amy Klobuchar's failures during the time she was one of the top prosecutors in her state. The Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, a former Democratic presidential candidate, has faced backlash for what critics have called a tame demand for a complete and thorough outside investigation, and is now being questioned on her record. Between 1999 and 2007, Klobuchar, the state's then top prosecutor, declined to press charges against more than a dozen officers accused of killing civilians, including Chauvin. That's Amy Klobuchar. This is a person that sent an innocent black man to prison for decades while he was unable to see his mother in her final days, yet allowed police officers to run ramshod over civilians, including police officers that did so multiple times. And because she failed to hold law enforcement to account when they endangered the lives needlessly of minority populations in the state of Minnesota, George Floyd is not here with us, with his family, with his loved ones, with his community today. That is on Amy Klobuchar. This should be the end
of her political career. She should resign from the Senate because of this. And while I don't expect that to happen, this should at the very least be the end of her vice presidential aspirations. For those who don't know, we know now that Amy Klobuchar is on Joe Biden's list to be his vice presidential running mate. She is officially being vetted by Joe Biden right now, and she's on a list with, you know, maybe 10 or so other women for that position with Joe Biden. But I have to say that even before this story, many activists within the Democratic Party, progressives, African-American leaders, wanted nothing to do with an Amy Klobuchar vice presidential run. They didn't want to see it because she had a bad record on race even before the George Floyd story. As we know, people have often been critical of how she's handled racial issues, issues of racial justice and equity. But further than that, there's a real sense that she would not drive enthusiasm among African-American voters. That not only do African-American voters want to see a black woman on the ticket, that if you are going to pick a white woman, picking one that has a bad record with regard to the African-American community is a real foolish move to make. It's a foolish move. And so here we see that not only does her record affect, you know, justice for African-Americans and that she prosecuted innocent people, but that her inaction with regard to police led to the passing of at least one innocent black man. What we're seeing happening in Minnesota, in large part, is all on her hands. The blood is on her hands. Simple as that. 100%. You know, you can add some nuance here if you want, but this is on Klobuchar. And I think at the very, very least, Joe Biden should come out and say that he condemns these acts, that he condemns Amy Klobuchar's inactions, and that he is officially no longer considering her as his vice presidential running mate. Now, do I expect that to happen? No, because here's the deal. Joe Biden, if anything, agrees with Amy Klobuchar on these sorts of issues. Joe Biden, if anything, would have done the exact same thing if he was in Amy Klobuchar's shoes back in the late 1990s, early mid-2000s. Joe Biden drafted a notoriously anti-black crime bill in the 1990s that, if anything, empowered people like Amy Klobuchar to do the awful things that she did. Maybe what she did wouldn't have been quite as easy without Joe Biden's pioneering efforts to make lives harder for African Americans all across the United States. So I don't necessarily expect this to be the thing that ends Amy Klobuchar's political aspirations, that ends her vice presidential aspirations. But it should be. It should be the thing that ends her political career, that ends her consideration to be vice president. And it should be the exact sort of thing that's connected to the fake performative racial justice viewpoints of corporate Democrats. We've seen them be exposed. They talk about how they support minority populations. They talk about how they fight for racial justice. But whether it's Joe Biden taking black votes for granted, or whether it's Joe Biden blaming Charlemagne the God for his own racial remarks, or whether it's Amy Klobuchar and her utter failure to represent the interests of black citizens within her jurisdiction, we see that the corporate Democrats are liars and they're performers, but they're not actual allies to the most marginalized and vulnerable people when they need them. Amy Klobuchar should face the consequences of her dereliction of duty when she was a prosecutor, and she hasn't yet. Now is the time for reckoning. I want to see not only her removed from a vice presidential consideration, but I would love nothing more than to see her resign her seat in the Senate and find somebody that actually respects the human rights of everyone that lives in Minnesota, and not just police officers that take the lives of minorities there.
Well, that was a striking story about a woman who most of us don't know that much about. But, you know, we listen to this guy. He is a reporter from The Guardian. But let's listen to what she has to say. I don't think we should necessarily believe what he has to say, but let's give her an opportunity to talk for herself. So let's see what she has to say.
You like ads?
I don't. That's why we created AdAlert. It's a product that makes it so you never have to.
Let's talk about some difficult questions for you, because there's new scrutiny now over your time as the Hennepin County Attorney. And Derek Chauvin, who was one of the officers involved, he is the officer who had his knee on the neck for 8 or 9 minutes of George Floyd, was also involved in the shooting death of Wayne Reyes in 2006. No charges were filed. You then were elected, and didn't go to the grand jury, I understand, until you were already in the Senate. So it was not your decision, the grand jury handling of this. But there were also more than 24 other cases of police-involved brutality that were not charged under your tenure. And it is raising a lot of questions, with all due respect,
sure,
about your tenure.
I really appreciate you asking this, Andrea. And honestly, yesterday when these reports came out about this officer, I was with our community, and my number one focus was the city that was burning. And now I have this opportunity to address this. Let me start with this specific case. This idea that I somehow declined a case which has been reported on some news blogs and then sent out on the internet against this officer is absolutely false. It is a lie. I don't know what else to say about it than it is a lie. The case was investigated. That investigation continued into a time where I was already sworn into the U.S. Senate. I never declined the case. It was handled and sent to the grand jury by my successor. And he has said that. His office has said that it was not my place to make the decisions, because the decisions were made when I was in the U.S. Senate. In fact, 9 months after I was in the U.S. Senate is when it went to the grand jury. Now let me address the bigger issue. I have said repeatedly, back when I was the county attorney, the cases that we had involving officer-involving shootings went to a grand jury. That was true in every jurisdiction across our state, and that was true in many jurisdictions across the country. I think that was wrong now. I think it would have been much better if I took the responsibility and looked at the cases and made the decision myself. But let me make this clear. We did not blow off these cases. We brought them to a grand jury, presented the evidence for a potential criminal prosecution, and the grand jury would come back with a decision. That is how we handled the cases. That aside, I want to move forward, and I think the best way we move forward is, one, prosecutors taking responsibility themselves. Two, police changes in terms of who is hired, the training, and of course, this major investigation that I am calling for with Minneapolis police. There must be change. There is systematic racism. You saw the pain on the faces of my constituents in my state. I want that to change. And the way you do that is by calling for that change and making sure it happens. If George Floyd's death has any legacy, because he will never be brought back, it should be systematic change to our criminal justice system in Minnesota and across the country. And as a member of the Judiciary Committee, I pledge to get that done.
But some people could, certainly the people of color in Minnesota who feel that this has been systematic, including a period when you had a role in it, have to feel that this should be disqualifying for you to be on the ticket as vice president. Do you feel now that you should take yourself out of consideration, given that we are now involved in yet another national conversation about racism and about the way white officials have overlooked needed change for decades?
First of all, this is Joe Biden's decision, and he was an excellent vice president. And he's going to make the best decision for him, for our country, for the pandemic and the crisis we're facing, to take over leadership of who's the best partner with him, to come in there with the confidence that he is going to show, with the compassion he's going to show, with his strong support and understanding of the African-American community. He will make that decision. He'll decide who he's considering. The second thing, as far as my record, and I think I made this case, the presidential campaign, Andrea, you asked a big question to me, and I want to be able to respond. When I was county attorney, African-American incarceration rate went down 12%. I was heralded by the Innocence Project for the work that I did in making sure that we had a DNA review of all of our cases, in working to have a new form of eyewitness ID that I implemented to reduce racist misidentification, to make sure that we videotaped interrogations and that that would happen nationally. There is institutional racism. And since I've gotten to the Senate, I've been one of the leaders in terms of pushing for sentencing reform to reduce sentencing for nonviolent offenders, a leader on voting rights. That's my record. And Joe Biden will decide who he wants in this job. My focus right now has been on my city. I have not been able to defend myself against attacks about cases that I think were unfair because my focus has been on fairness for George Floyd's memory and for his family and for our community to heal. That will continue to be my focus, but I do appreciate this time to be able to set the record straight.
Hey there, I'm Chris Hayes from MSNBC. Thanks for watching MSNBC on YouTube. If you want to keep up to date with the videos we're putting out, you can click subscribe just below me or click over on this list to see lots of other great videos.
Well, you heard her side of the story, and you heard what she had to say. What's so very interesting, she sounded very compassionate in her presentation. But if you want to hear something, there are so many other people who have had other comments to make about her. And so what I'm hoping to do...
So we have to talk about how Amy Klobuchar played a direct role in the emerging George Floyd story coming out of Minnesota, coming out of Minneapolis.
Coming back
at it. For those who don't know, the police officer, Derek...
Sorry about that. Couldn't get it to move over to where I wanted it to move over, but I think I have something here that you might find extremely interesting as it relates to scrutiny on Mrs. Klobuchar. Let's take a listen to this right here.
You may not know his name, but Myon Burrell's 17-year-old case has become a national storyline in the presidential election. It is now under scrutiny after Senator Amy Klobuchar initially took credit for making sure the killer of 11-year-old Tyesha Edwards was put behind bars. After a year-long investigation, the Associated Press says the case was flawed. Myon, just 16 years old at the time, has maintained his innocence, and so he went to the Minnesota Correctional Facility Stillwater in Minneapolis to hear from Myon firsthand.
Who told you that I was going to have a lot of people? How can a lot of people tell you something that is not true? So they have false accusations.
New explosive excerpts from interrogation video in the controversial case of Myon Burrell.
That's your job, to make sure that justice is served. Understand? So make sure that justice is served. I know for a fact that I'm doing anything, so I'm not really worried about anything.
His arrest and conviction is one Senator Amy Klobuchar has brought back into the public consciousness, initially wearing it as a badge of honor as it relates to her tough-on-crime reputation and her efforts to bring justice for shooting victims in the African-American community.
My job is to hold people accountable when they break the law.
But here in her state of Minnesota, an ugly scar, exposed and time-tested, lingering like an open wound, constant reminder of the gaping hole a stray bullet left in this community back in November of 2002 after it penetrated this home across the street. Inside, an 11-year-old little girl named Tyesha Edwards doing her homework at the dining room table.
And I ran in, tried to call 911. I didn't know if I should do CPR or not. I just knew she was laying on the floor. And then when they brought her out, she was passed away.
Outrage erupted in the black community with mounting pressure on the police department to find her killer.
It was an 11-year-old girl that was hit with a stray bullet, right? And so there was a lot of concern in the community that justice was served.
The killing was so senseless. So I think it had reached a point at that time where, you know, there just needed to be justice, and there needed to be fast justice.
4 days after Tyesha's death, police said they tracked down her killer.
16-year-old gang member Myon Burrell fired a gunshot into their home. A bullet hit Tyesha in the chest.
That was 17 years ago. This day, Myon Burrell, now almost 34 years old, says he didn't do it.
Myon, a lot of people say that they're innocent. Why Should people believe you?
I've always let people know that I was innocent. It's just now that I have a voice. But it's not about what I tell people to make them believe, but what people could see for themselves. You know what I mean? Like, go and look into it, and then you tell me if you believe I'm innocent.
That's exactly what Robin McDowell, a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, did as part of an Associated Press year-long investigation.
Why do you believe Mayan? So I didn't go into the investigation thinking he was innocent for sure. I did believe that when a lot of inmate friends and rivals were saying that they believed he was innocent, that he was worth looking into.
Just last month, the AP released an article concluding the case was flawed, citing inconsistencies in the police investigation that led to Mayan being jailed for life.
I started getting the police reports, getting the court transcripts from the first and second trial, and just went through and looked for inconsistencies and started kind of just hitting the pavement and talking to, you know, everyone I could talk to.
Among those she talked to? Ike Tyson, who said for years that he was the killer, not Mayan.
It's a whole another burden to carry after what I've already done. I already shot an innocent girl. Now an innocent guy. And at the time he was a kid, is locked up for something he didn't do. So it's like I'm carrying two burdens.
Without a gun, fingerprints, or DNA, the case against Mayan largely relied on testimony from a teen rival who changed his story several times about who he said he saw at the crime scene. He has since died. The investigation questioned police tactics caught on camera.
You know, if I knew him, then I'd say, yeah, yeah. No, I just need to make the police across that street. I just sent out $1,000 about 2 hours ago. Okay. And I can keep signing until I get the names. And I'll take it from there. And no one will ever see or know where it came from.
Where an investigator offers $500 for names of potential suspects, even for hearsay from someone who said he knew nothing about the crime.
But it's here today, and I'm not exactly sure where he came from. Anyway, like I said, hearsay still worth something to me. You don't have to sign a word, you don't have to sign anything that you got money from you, nothing. I'm only talking $200. Maybe $300, $400. Is it better than that? So I don't know what you know. It's better than that I can give. $500 from me. If it's true.
And while this video has only recently surfaced, Mayan believes surveillance video may have existed that could have exonerated him, but police never pursued it. The surveillance video from this convenience store, Cup Foods, where Mayan says he was at the time of the shooting.
I know
that he got that from Cup Foods. That's the way I know that they come from. Fries is always so delicious. I can tell that they eat your meal from each other. Great job. You're welcome.
Breyers Natural Vanilla is made with 100% grade A milk and cream and only sustainably farmed vanilla. Better starts with Breyers.
That's his alibi. Wouldn't it have been just as simple as finding a surveillance video at Cup convenience store? It should have been, especially when he said during his interrogation, go get the tapes. Like, there is no excuse in my mind at that point to not go pick up the surveillance tapes or to go talk to the alibi. He specifically gives the name of the girl, says I was with her, go talk to her. Yet nobody else never goes talk to her. So those are two really kind of clear, open, and shut things to me. If you're looking to at both sides of the investigation, not just to find who's guilty, but to see if someone's innocent, you're gonna investigate both sides.
And you went to find that tape, and what were you told?
I was told they didn't remember, but they definitely had surveillance cameras up at that time, many of them.
Maybe like a month into me being housed or being incarcerated, being locked up, you know, my mom, she ended up passing away. She ended up dying in a car accident from visiting me. And as a 16-year-old child, it was so devastating. And I was in a place where it was nobody but me. So that kind of took over my state of mind. I really stopped asking questions,
to my attorney at that point, and I, all the way until I went to trial, I believed that they had those tapes. And so then when I went to trial and he never presented them, or they never, it was just like, you know, I didn't really know how to take it.
In May of 2003, a jury convicted Mion of first-degree murder. For more than half of his life now, this has been home for Mion.
You could have taken a plea deal. If you had, you'd be out already. Why haven't you?
Well, I mean, so it hurts to know that you could be out right now. So I could put in a pill and say, hey, listen, give me less time and let me out right now. But then I would be taking responsibility for a crime that I didn't commit. And I could never do that.
In 2005, 2 years after he was found guilty, the Minnesota Supreme Court overturned Mion's conviction.
That was a Miranda rights violation. When Mion was being interrogated, he was asking for his mother, and he asked to talk to his mother, asked if she could see his mother 13 times, and that was denied again and again. After the third time of asking, he was read his Miranda.
He was only 16 at the time, but was charged as an adult. The court ruled the denial of his mother, along with about a half dozen other errors during trial, warranted the overturn. But the head prosecutor at that time, Hennepin County Attorney Amy Klobuchar, immediately vowed to retry Mion, and in 2006 offered this justification for why Mion wasn't allowed to see his mother.
The police didn't want him to be able to compare notes, to be able to fabricate an alibi.
Burrell was tried again and found guilty by a judge in 2008, a conviction that has been upheld on appeal. By the time of his trial, Klobuchar had left the prosecutor's office for the U.S. Senate.
Amy Klobuchar, the same district attorney, charged me not only once, but even after my conviction was overturned, she recharged me. She recharged me with first-degree murder, never looked into the facts of the case, never even addressed the misconduct that had taken place, and still put the same detective, the same police on my case to go and get more bogus evidence.
So do you hold Amy Klobuchar responsible?
Yes. Personally, I feel like she is the source of everything that happened with her charging me. You never took the time to look into this case. You never took the time to go and actually see, is this true or is this false? And when she did that, I believe that she gave the police free rein and said, just bring me back a conviction, secure me a conviction. And that's what they did by any means necessary.
But her response has been, look, he's been tried twice, he's been convicted twice. The second time, I didn't have anything to do with that.
She charged me both times. She didn't try me. She didn't even try me the first time. She just played a big part in securing a conviction by getting on TV. Every time I went to court or any time something took place, she went on TV or she went in the newspaper and said, this is what she's going to do to me.
The case of Taisha Edwards is one Klobuchar has touted as a success again and again in her book, The Senator Next Door, and in 2006 during her campaign for the U.S. Senate, showing how she got justice for African-American victims of violence.
My little girl, Taisha, was murdered. Amy saw to it that those gang members were put away.
Minnesota's police have also endorsed Amy Klobuchar. Trust their word.
She even brought it up just this past September on the debate stage as a candidate for president of the United States.
The ACLU's legal director in Minnesota has said that you showed no interest in racial justice. Do you wish now that you had done more?
That's not my record. The cases that came to us, the African-American community that came to us, they said there was no justice for their little kids. There was a kid named Byron Phillips that was shot on his front porch. No one had bothered to figure out who did it. When I came into that office, we worked with the community groups. We put up billboards. We found the shooter, and we put him in jail. We did the same for the killer of a little girl named Taisha Edwards, who was doing her homework at her kitchen table and was shot through the window.
I think that's the main point about Mion in particular, right? Like, if you are going to hold this up as an example and something to be proud of, then this is a really bad example. And this is a nightmare of an example. Of all the cases I've looked at and have been interested, Mion is the one that, to me, is the most clear-cut. But there are others, and I may have focused on someone else if she hadn't been waving that flag.
Amy Klobuchar, as the Hennepin County Attorney, should have protected the rights of this juvenile and treated him with dignity and respect rather than acting as if he was disposable.
As a result of the AP investigation, just last month, a group of civil rights advocates, including members of Black Lives Matter Twin Cities, called for the senator to suspend her campaign for president.
You have wrongs that need to be right.
The head of the Minneapolis NAACP says justice was not served.
17 years of a lifetime sentence in prison for a crime that he did not commit.
How are you so convinced?
I'm so convinced because there was no evidence to convict him in the first place. There was no gun. There was no DNA. He has a solid alibi of being at Tufts School. The alibis have come forward. It was really based off of a rival gang member who basically said that he was the one who did it. And even if there's doubt and there's not certainty, I think that it's enough that we have to go back and review it. Amy Klobuchar, you have questions that need to be answered.
How culpable do you think Amy Klobuchar is when it comes to Mayon Burrell?
I think that she was the lead prosecutor at the time. I believe that she utilized this case to advance her political career, both as a senator and now doing her presidential campaign. And I think that she owes it. Every day that's going by is a life loss, is potential loss, is Mayon's life going down the drain, his time he could be spending with his family, his time he could be spending in life. And so Amy Klobuchar has a great debt to pay.
In recent weeks, Senator Klobuchar has faced tough questions.
I didn't know about this new evidence.
How do you defend something like that to someone like me who is the mother of a black boy, a black teenager? This case would be my worst nightmare.
All of the evidence needs to be immediately reviewed in that case. Well, I wasn't aware of that information, the new information.
The senator grilled again at last week's debate.
Why should black and Latino voters trust your judgment now if it appears you may have gotten it wrong then?
First, I'll start with that case. It is very clear that any evidence, if there is new evidence, even old evidence, it should be reviewed by that office and by the county attorney. That must happen. I have called for that review. This was a case involving an 11-year-old African-American girl named Kaisha Edwards who was shot doing her homework at her kitchen table. Three people were convicted. One of the cases is the one that is being investigated by a journalist, and I think it's very important that that evidence come forward.
In fairness, Amy Klobuchar has called for any new evidence in this case to be examined. Is that not enough?
It's not enough. Amy Klobuchar, again, I will reiterate, is a very powerful woman in the state of Minnesota as a senator through all her relationships and previously being in that role. And if she wanted it to be open, I believe it would.
But in a statement to ABC News, current Hennepin County Attorney Michael Freeman strongly disputes Burrell's claims of innocence, saying he's been convicted twice for the murder. And they say the case is being unfairly politicized because of Klobuchar's prior involvement, and they point out that she was no longer working in their county office during the second trial. The prosecutor's office claims Burrell's alibi has changed three times during and since his trials. He confessed his involvement to a cousin and a jail informant. It was common practice for police to offer cash rewards in unsolved cases, and that it's not unusual to not find a weapon or DNA evidence. The office also provided a video statement.
We focus on facts. Mr. Burrell is represented by an attorney, and we have been working with that attorney for a year. If his legal team presents us with new evidence, we will review it. So far, that has not happened. And the only facts are from Mr. Burrell's trial a dozen years ago.
Well, you had an opportunity to listen to some more information concerning the woman who might become vice president of the United States.
That's so bad.
I'm going to step back and continue to go back.
Has a long history of questionable actions as a police officer.
All right. That was Mayon Burrell, a young man who was says he's innocent, and people did not even pay any attention to actually the information concerning him. Let's go on to somebody else. Let's check this out.
This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman as we turn to the U.S. presidential race. After a surprising third-place finish in the New Hampshire primary, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar is attempting to gain ground in the national polls, but Klobuchar is facing mounting scrutiny over her record as a district attorney in Minnesota. The Minneapolis NAACP, Black Lives Matter Twin Cities, and other racial justice groups recently called on Klobuchar to suspend her presidential campaign following a shocking investigation by the Associated Press. The AP report centered on the case of Mayan Burrell, an African-American teenager who was sentenced to life in prison over the 2002 murder of 11-year-old Taisha Edwards. Klobuchar led this case against Mayan Burrell when she was Hennepin County's district attorney. But the AP report says she may have mishandled the case and that Burrell could be innocent. The Associated Press report shows how prosecutors had no DNA or fingerprints tying Burrell to the murder and that they relied on jailhouse informants, some of whom have since recanted their testimonies. Burrell has always maintained his innocence. On the campaign trail, Klobuchar cited the jailing of Burrell as one of her achievements. She brought up the case during a debate in September.
We found the shooter and we put him in jail. We did the same for the killer of a little girl named Taisha Edwards who was doing her homework at her kitchen table and was shot through the window.
On Tuesday, Senator Klobuchar was grilled about the case by Sunny Hostin, co-host of The View.
I've reviewed the facts of that case, and it is one of the most flawed investigations and prosecutions that I think I have ever seen. When you look at it, you have your homicide detective on tape offering informants $500 a piece for names. When I looked at it, I also saw that Mr. Burrell's alibi witnesses were not looked at. His surveillance tapes were not looked at. I mean, how do you defend something like that to someone like me who is the mother of a black boy, a black teenager? This case would be my worst nightmare.
Well, Sunny, I'll start with this. I've been very clear. All of the evidence needs to be immediately reviewed in that case. The past evidence and also any new evidence that has come forward, I've called for that.
Well, you're a U.S. senator now. You're a powerful woman. What do you intend to do to right this wrong?
Well, I've called for the office and the courts to review the evidence. That is what we must do in the justice system. I've also worked extensively with the Innocence Project in my previous job, and we reviewed all the serious cases we had that involved DNA evidence. This one didn't, but we reviewed those cases.
It had no gun, it had no DNA evidence, it had no fingerprint.
We're prosecuting it must be reviewed.
Sunny Hostin of The View questioning Democratic presidential candidate Amy Klobuchar on Tuesday. We go now to Minneapolis, where we're joined by Nikema Levy Armstrong, civil rights attorney, activist, head of the Racial Justice Network, former president of the Minneapolis chapter of the NAACP. So if you can talk more about the significance of this case. Now, very clearly, Senator Klobuchar brought it up herself to show how, her competence is putting people in jail who killed an 11-year-old child. Explain what you feel is wrong and the significance of this AP investigation.
It's shocking at this point that Amy Klobuchar is still in the race for president of the United States, given the significance of Mayan Burrell's case, the fact that he was merely a child himself at the time that he was brought into the criminal justice system. When he was first interrogated by police, 8 hours, no attorney, his mother in the next room, he asked for his mother 13 times, and he was denied that opportunity to even consult with his mother. He has maintained his innocence from the beginning. And in spite of that information, Amy Klobuchar has exploited this case. She has exploited the tragic death of Taisha Edwards, the 11-year-old child who was killed in this situation through an accidental shooting outside of her home. And she exploited Mayan Burrell, using his name or using this case repeatedly throughout her career and to bolster her career. As a matter of fact, when she ran for the Senate in 2006, She put forward a commercial that included Taisha's mother and other victims of crime, demonstrating that she was tough on crime. I do not feel that she has any remorse for what she did to Mayan and the impact upon his family and the community, and she is continuing to deflect away questions about her role in the unjust and wrongful conviction of Mayan Burrell.
So you talk about Mayan inside being interrogated as a 16-year-old. He repeatedly asked for his mother. His mother was just outside that room demanding of the police that she be inside with her son, and they told her no. The day before he was indicted and she was visiting him in jail, she was driving home and her car went off the road. She hit a tree, it exploded, and she was killed.
Yes, knowing that Mayan did not get to even pay his mother respects at her funeral is something that still shocks me to this day.
She did not allow
callousness and
she
cruelty.
Did not allow him.
No, Amy Klobuchar did not allow Mayan Burrell to attend his mother's funeral, claiming that he was a threat to public safety. I have seen people who are incarcerated in prison be allowed to leave prison and go and pay their last respects to their family members at funerals, but Amy Klobuchar denied a child this opportunity. Again, Mayan Burrell has continued to maintain his innocence. The co-defendants in this case have come forward. In particular, the person who pulled the trigger back several years ago, saying that Mayan Burrell was innocent and taking responsibility for the crime, but his words have fallen upon deaf ears. And so Mayan continues to pay the price, having been locked up for roughly 18 years for a crime that he did not commit.
Now, to be clear, he has been offered plea deals that would get him out now, and he has said, no, I won't plead guilty to a crime I didn't commit?
Absolutely. He is a strong man of faith, and he does not believe that he should have to plead guilty to a crime for which he did not commit. And he said that he's not only doing this for himself, he's also doing this for Taisha.
So you are calling for the NAACP, Black Lives Matter, Twin Cities, are calling for Amy Klobuchar to suspend her presidential campaign. Can you explain why?
Absolutely. I believe that Mayan Burrell's case, coupled with Amy Klobuchar's predatory behavior as a prosecutor, should be disqualifying. We know that with the current president in office, there have been a lot of concerns surrounding his questionable conduct, his ethics, his rhetoric. We are seeing similarities in terms of the way that Amy Klobuchar conducted herself as a prosecutor and the way that she is responding to this case. Instead of accepting responsibility, acknowledging her mistakes, and rolling up her sleeves to help set Mayan free, she is continuing to sidestep these questions, absolve herself of responsibility, and minimize the significance of sending an innocent Black teenage boy to prison for life. That is simply unconscionable, and it is unacceptable, and those are not the qualities that we need to see in our next president of the United States.
Let me ask you about this BuzzFeed report. Klobuchar has also been criticized for failing to bring charges against a single police officer who killed a citizen in her eight-year run as the top prosecutor in Minnesota's most populous county. There were more than two dozen police-involved killings in that period. Nikema Levy Armstrong, can you weigh in here?
Absolutely. Amy Klobuchar received the endorsement of police unions when she ran her various campaigns. And as a result, she did not hold police officers accountable. She worked very closely with the Minneapolis Police Department that has had a long history of corruption. As a matter of fact, about $4.8 million in lawsuits were settled against the Minneapolis Police Department in 122 police misconduct cases during the time period in which Amy Klobuchar was the Hennepin County Attorney. And so she had a very close relationship with police. The Black community called her out consistently for not holding police officers accountable. As a matter of fact, a shooting of a teenager happened in 2004, and that teenager's mother sent Amy Klobuchar a letter asking her to not use a grand jury and to charge the officers who killed her son. Amy Klobuchar did not even respond to that mother's letter, and this was an African-American woman simply demanding justice on behalf of her child.
Nikina Levy Armstrong, I want to thank you for being with us, civil rights attorney, activist, head of the Racial Justice Network, former president of the Minneapolis chapter of the NAACP. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is accepting applications for paid year-long news production fellowship here in New York. Go to Democracy.
Well, we heard a long one this time. That a person is still in a position to do something about the total investigation, as well as our different treatments of saving many of the police officers. Let's listen to some more. Chris Wallace, who is a sort of a Republican stronghold in reporting. Let's see what he has to say about Chris about Klobuchar.
Hello, everyone. I'm coming directly to you for asking a quick favor. Would you add your name to that?
Amy Klobuchar used to be the top prosecutor in Minnesota. And when she was the top prosecutor, she tried a case involving a 16-year-old murder suspect. Now, that case has come back up for discussion because of how it was prosecuted and how this 16-year-old was sentenced to life behind bars, and there was little to no evidence to convict him. Now, I'm going to give you all the details of what happened in that case. Unfortunately, the victim in that case was an 11-year-old girl. But before we do, I want you to watch this video where Chris Wallace asks her about it, and just pay attention to how uncomfortable she is in trying to dodge the question.
They found police offered cash to potential witnesses and relied on testimony from jailhouse informants who got reduced sentences. Senator, did you know, when you were the prosecutor, did you know about any of that? And should this man's case be reopened?
Well, justice must be done, Chris. And just to put it in some context, this was an 11-year-old girl named Taisha Edwards. She was doing her homework at her kitchen table, and a bullet went through the wall, and she died. And it was a tragic case. It was a big deal within the African-American community. And our focus was on bringing the people to justice and doing justice for her family.
Senator, we know it was a bad case. The question is whether this young man did it, and this AP investigation indicates that other people who were there said he didn't do it, and that some of the witnesses that were relied on were very questionable. You were the head prosecutor. Did you know? And if you didn't, shouldn't you have known?
There actually were two trials in this case, Chris. One was after I had left the office.
But he was convicted in the case when you were the prosecutor.
If I could just answer.
Okay, so she's struggling. There's more from the interview, but I want to give you some important facts from this case so you kind of understand why it's being talked about now. The Associated Press went back, and they started speaking to witnesses and really digging into how this case was prosecuted, and they found a number of significant issues. So to go back a little bit, an 11-year-old girl was killed by a stray bullet while doing her homework at her dining room table in 2002. Klobuchar's office put Taisha Edwards' killer, a black teen, behind bars for life. Klobuchar's office convicted Mayan Burrell, an African-American teenager, over the shooting death of 11-year-old Taisha Edwards back in 2002. So that was when the prosecution happened. Now, an Associated Press investigation into the 17-year-old case uncovered new evidence and inconsistencies raising questions about whether he was railroaded by police. The case relied heavily on a teen rival of Burrell's who gave conflicting accounts when identifying the shooter, who was largely obscured behind a wall 120 feet away. With no other eyewitnesses, police turned to multiple jailhouse snitches. That was written by the Associated Press. Some have since recanted, saying they were coached or coerced. Others were given reduced time, raising questions about their credibility. And the lead homicide detective offered major dollars for names, even if it was hearsay. Despite the lack of physical evidence, they all but wrapped up their case against Burrell in 4 days. Again, this was a minor 16-year-old who was convicted and sentenced to life in prison based on pretty much no evidence and just hearsay by individuals that police spoke to.
So, look, people make mistakes, and God knows I've made plenty of mistakes. I think the right way to go about that is to try to correct it and make amends. But when you see Klobuchar and Kamala Harris and Pete Buttigieg having made significant mistakes, all coincidentally involving the African-American community, now Kamala Harris is African-American herself, but she was also a prosecutor like Klobuchar and was very tough. And in the old days, they would say tough on crime. Now, looking back at it, it looks like tough on minorities. And the reason people are concerned is not because, oh, you were too tough on the people who did it. No, you were tough on people who might not have done it at all based on their background. And so I know she's in the middle of a presidential campaign. I know it's days away from voting. And so she's in a tough political spot. But the way you could have avoided that is by coming out earlier and going, you know what? I don't think we did justice here.
Right.
But they just can't ever say it.
Right.
They can't ever say it. They always double down or try to evade.
Let me give you a few more facts about the case before we go to the last video on this. So there was no gun, fingerprints, or DNA. Alibis were never seriously pursued. Key evidence has gone missing or was never obtained, including a convenience store surveillance tape that Burrell and others say would have cleared him. His co-defendants, meanwhile, have admitted their part in Taisha's death. Burrell, they say, was not even there. For years, one of them, Ike Tyson, has insisted that he was actually the trigger man. Police and prosecutors refused to believe him, pointing to the contradictory accounts in the early days of the investigation. Now he swears he was just trying to get the police off his back. Here is a recent quote from him. He says, I already shot an innocent girl, said Tyson, who is serving a 45-year sentence. Now an innocent guy, at the time he was a kid, is locked up for something he didn't do. So it's like I'm carrying two burdens. Okay.
So you know what's amazing to me? Is so whenever it's a progressive, they'll just say, oh, what did you say 28 years ago, 38 years ago, et cetera. They're about to do that to Bernie Sanders after he wins Iowa, if he wins Iowa, okay? I'm being quite literal. They're going to go back to old writings he had for 40, 50 years ago, okay? Mm-hmm. But what about what you have done? So doesn't it weigh on your conscience, Senator Klobuchar, that you might have put an innocent man in jail? If I did that, do you know what I would do to try to get him out?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would spend day and night trying to figure out, did he do it? Didn't he do it? Did I do the right thing? Did I do the wrong thing? Why is this Ike Tyson? I could talk to Ike Tyson. Like, really, like, what are you trying to help a friend out, or did you really do it, et cetera? Are you trying to get a lenient sentence now, or were you trying to get a lenient sentence back then? Because it looks like you might have put an innocent man in jail who's still there. Doesn't that bother you? Doesn't that gnaw at you? If it doesn't, that's the problem with politicians.
No, it is. It is. Because it represents that if you don't care about justice for one individual, if you're comfortable with the possibility of putting an innocent teenager behind bars for the rest of his life, how can you be trusted to represent everyone in the United States? It's a huge issue, right? Especially at a time when, you know, criminal justice reform is an important priority for a lot of Americans. Now, without further ado, I do want to give you the last clip with Chris Wallace asking Klobuchar some tough questions about this case.
My view as someone that has worked with the Innocence Project for years is that if there is new evidence, it must come forward. It must come forward, and it must be considered immediately by the court. The job of a prosecutor is to do justice, and that means to me, convict the guilty, protect the innocent. Do your job without fear
of
it.
Senator, you're not answering my question. Senator, you're not answering my question. Did you know about the fact that there was this questionable evidence that the police were coming up with?
I didn't know about this new evidence. No, I didn't know about this new evidence until I saw this report. I couldn't have. I haven't been in the office for 12 years.
But I was wondering, when you were in the office, did you know about this questionable evidence?
So she seems to be dodging the question there. And
she was careful. She's a lawyer.
Yeah.
She said, I didn't know about the new evidence. Okay. But he wasn't asking about the new evidence. He was asking, did you know at the time that the police were trying to get these witnesses and paying them off, et cetera? The quote-unquote new evidence is something that already happened that is being revealed now.
Right.
But if you're the prosecutor, you might have already known that back then. That's what Chris Wallace is asking, and that's what Klobuchar definitely did not answer.
Don't miss your chance to win a trip to Los Angeles and have dinner with Cenk, John, and me. Just head to tyt.com/dinnerinLA to register to win. Sign up for a free Aspirations Spend and Save account. Then you just register your eligibility and swipe your Aspiration card daily on purchases to gain entries. Not only are you entering to win a trip to Los Angeles and dinner with TYT hosts, you're also not depositing your hard-earned money into fossil fuel exploration or production. As a friendly reminder, even if you already have an Aspiration account, you must still register for eligibility into the sweepstakes.
I'm going to stop it right there. I'm going to get paid for that commercial. But the bottom line is that you've had an opportunity to hear so many different statements concerning
what's one of these things that contains a protein that can make your eyes pain work?
For president of the United States, not president of the United States, but vice president. She did run for president of the United States, but now she's on the list of Joe Biden to be one of his running mates for vice president of the United States. We all know that Joe is up in age. And so what I decided to do and to look at today was one of the people who seemed to have a cloud over her and would lend itself to the same kind of situation that we presently are facing as it relates to the killing of more than one black person in the last week or so. And who knows, it might have even been more than that. We just don't know. So I just thought that it might be interesting to see that particular one. We also have another woman who is on a list, on the same list. And let's see what is being stated by her.
I ask unanimous consent that the Senate proceed to legislative session for a period of morning business with the senators permitted to speak therein for up to 10 minutes each.
Is there objection? Without objection.
Mr. President, I rise to ask expedited passage of H.R. 35, the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, as amended. I seek to amend this legislation, not because I take it or I take lynching lightly, but because I take it seriously. And this legislation does not. Lynching is a tool of terror that claimed the lives of nearly 5,000 Americans between 1881 and 1968. But this bill would cheapen the meaning of lynching by defining it so broadly as to include a minor bruise or abrasion. Our nation's history of racial terrorism demands more seriousness from us than that. W.E.B. Du Bois wrote in his autobiography about the 1899 lynching of Sam Hose in Georgia. Du Bois wrote that after the lynching, Hose's knuckles were viewed on display at a store in Mitchell Street in Atlanta. His liver and heart were even presented to the governor of Georgia as a souvenir. Sickening, grotesque, the images of lynching. In 1931, Raymond Gunn was lynched in Maryville, Missouri. The spectacle drew a crowd of almost 4,000 people, including, if you can believe it, women and their children. In The Tragedy of Lynching, the author writes that one woman even held her little girl up so high so she could better see the victim who was, quote, blazing on the roof. Sickening and grotesque, these images. In the summer of 1955, 14-year-old Emmett Till was visiting family in Money, Mississippi, when he went to a country store and bought some candy. While in there, he was accused of flirting with a white woman, and for that offense, Emmett Till was kidnapped in the middle of the night and bludgeoned so badly that afterwards his body was unrecognizable. He could only be identified by the ring he was wearing. After seeing her son's remains, his mother insisted on an open casket funeral, so the whole world could see what the killers had done to her son. We must remember the murders of Emmett Till, Raymond Gunn, Sam Hose, and the thousands of others whose lives were destroyed by the barbarity of the lynch mob. But this bill will not do that. This bill would expand the meaning of lynching to include any bodily injury, including a cut, an abrasion, or a bruise, physical pain, illness, or any other injury to the body, no matter how temporary. Mr. President, words have meaning. It would be a disgrace for the Congress of the United States to declare that a bruise is lynching, that an abrasion is lynching, that any injury to the body, no matter how temporary, is on par with the atrocities done to people like Emmett Till, Raymond Gunn, and Sam Hose, who were killed for no reason but because they were black. To do that would demean their memory and cheapen the historic and horrific legacy of lynching in our country. As Congressman Amash stated, to be clear, the bill does not make lynching a new federal hate crime. Murdering someone on account of their race or conspiring to do so is now illegal under federal law. It's already a federal crime, and it's already a hate crime. He's right. We have had federal hate crime statutes for over 50 years, and it has been a federal hate crime to murder someone because of their race for over a decade. Additionally, murder is already a crime in 50 states. In fact, rather than consider a good-intentioned but symbolic bill, the Senate could immediately consider addressing qualified immunity and ending police militarization. We can and must do better. That is why no one in the Senate has been more involved in criminal justice reform than I have. No one has introduced more criminal justice reform bills. In my time in the Senate, I have authored or co-sponsored at least 22 unique criminal justice reform bills. I am acutely aware of the injustices perpetrated year in and year out in our cities. But reform needs to be more than window dressing. That is why I'm on the floor today to offer expedited passage, pass it today, the Emmett Till anti-lynching bill as amended. Lynching is a particularly vicious kind of murder, and a federal law should treat it as such. For these reasons, the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act should be adopted with my amendment, which would apply the criminal penalties for lynching only and not for other crimes. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I ask unanimous consent that the Senate proceed to the immediate consideration of H.R. 35, which received by the House. I ask unanimous consent that my amendment at the desk be agreed to, the bill as amended be considered read a third time and passed, and that the motion to reconsider be considered made and laid upon the table.
Is there objection?
Reserving the right to object.
The Senator for California.
The idea that we would not be taking the issue of lynching seriously is an insult. An insult to Senator Booker, to Senator Tim Scott, and myself, and all of the senators, past and present, who have understood this is part of the great stain of America's history. To suggest that anything short of pulverizing someone so much that the casket would otherwise be closed except for the heroism and courage of Emmett Till's mother, to suggest that lynching would only be a lynching if someone's heart was pulled out and produced and displayed to someone else is ridiculous. And on this day, the day of George Floyd's funeral, on this day, a day that should be a day of national mourning, Mr. President, in 2018, the Senate unanimously passed bipartisan anti-lynching legislation, which I proudly introduced with the only other black members of this body, Senator Cory Booker and Senator Tim Scott. It was a historic moment. It marked the first time in the history of our country that federal anti-lynching legislation had been passed by the United States Senate. It passed again by unanimous consent in 2019. Senator Paul is now trying to weaken a bill that was already passed. There's no reason for this. There's no reason for this. So Senator Paul's amendment would place a greater burden on victims of lynching than is currently required under federal hate crimes law. There is no reason for this. There is no reason other than cruel and deliberate obstruction on a day of mourning. On this very day, at this very hour, there is a memorial service to honor the life of George Floyd, who was murdered on a sidewalk by a police officer with a knee on his neck. For 8 minutes and 46 seconds, George Floyd pleaded for his life, called for his late mother, and said he could not breathe. The pain experienced not only by that man, that human being, and his family and his children, but the pain of the people of America witnessing what we have witnessed since the founding of this country, which is that the Black lives have not been taken seriously as being fully human and deserving of dignity. And it should not require a maiming or torture in order for us to recognize a lynching when we see it and recognize it by federal law and call it what it is, which is that it is a crime that should be punishable with accountability and consequence. So it is remarkable and it is painful to be standing here right now, especially when people of all races are marching in the streets of America, outraged by the hate and the violence and the murder that has been fueled by racism during the span of this country's life. And America is raw right now, her wounds exposed, raw from the fact that in the history of our country, Black people have been treated as less than human. I stood here with Senator Booker when we first proposed this lynching law, and we talked about the pain and the history of the pain of this issue in America. And the fact is that the country is raw because America has never fully addressed the historic and systemic racism that has existed in our country. And our bill in its current form is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for this body to acknowledge the seriousness of this, to acknowledge that if someone places a noose over someone else's neck, why would you require that in addition their heart would be pulled out or their body pulverized to the point beyond recognition? Our bill is an opportunity to right a wrong and an opportunity for a reckoning in federal law. And we cannot pretend that lynchings are a thing of the past. Ahmaud Arbery was a victim of a modern-day lynching. He was murdered on February 23, 2020, just 3 months ago. Today we learned that someone heard one of the men who killed Mr. Arbery use a racial slur after shooting him. He should be alive today, and his killers should be brought to justice. No longer should the crime of lynching go unpunished. No longer should victims and their families go without justice. And in closing, Ida B. Wells once said, quote, "Our country's national crime is lynching. It is not the creature of an hour, the sudden outburst of uncontrolled fury, or the unspeakable brutality of an insane mob. It represents the cool, calculated deliberation of intelligent people who openly avow that there is an unwritten law that justifies them in putting human beings to death without complaint under oath, without trial by jury, without opportunity to make a defense, and without right of appeal. Our country has waited too long for a reckoning on this issue of lynching, and I believe no senator should stop the full weight of the law in its capacity to protect these human beings and human life. Senator Booker and I are working on a comprehensive bill to address this hurt and the tragedy at the heart of this national day of mourning, and I object to Senator Paul's efforts to weaken our legislation. I yield the floor.
What's your objection to Senator Paul's request?
Reserving the right to object, Mr. President.
Senator for New Jersey.
Thank you very much, sir. I want to thank Senator Harris for her words, and I want to thank her as a lead senator on this bill. I want to thank her for her partnership and leadership. I also want to thank Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina, who has shown extraordinary commitment to this legislation as well. I want to thank, on the House side, I want to thank Bobby Rush, former Black Panther. I want to thank him for his leadership and generational commitment to racial justice in America. I also want to recognize the tireless advocacy of Erica Gordon Taylor, who is an actual relative of Emmett Till and the founder of Mamie Till Mobley's Foundation. She was here the last time this bill was before this body. She's dead now. And I know she's looking down and hoping that we don't disappoint her. Mr. President, in February of 2019, this body did something historic. And I don't mean to be emotional, I'm raw this week. But I stood here with Kamala and we wept. And we talked about the hundreds of years, over a century, excuse me, of effort to pass legislation, brought up and defeated time and time again in this body by avowed segregationists, and how proud I was that at a time when the partisanship is high in this country, we gathered together in one voice, 100 senators, to pass this exact same bill, because there are good people in this body on both sides. And we were correcting a wrong of history. And nobody in this body needs a lecture on lynching and how horrible it is. Everybody in this body abhors racism and believes that this violence is unjust. There are friends of mine here. Unanimously, we passed that legislation. We made history on this floor. And this is why I'm confused, because this bill has been passed unanimously. And here we're on a day of a memorial service for another person that has, whose murder was condemned by people on both sides of the aisle. I sat where you sat, Mr. President, and watched the differences between the Republican leader and the Democratic leader. I don't go back that long in this body, but I've watched Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer disagrees so deeply time and time again, but God, we came together and passed the bill unanimously. Mitch McConnell let that bill come to this floor, didn't try to block it. And my colleague over there, Rand Paul, was one of the first hands I shook on this Senate floor. He is my friend. And everything he said about his commitment to criminal justice reform, it is right. One of the first bills I wrote here, I wrote with Rand Paul. And then he went further. At another time like this, when America was raw, when another black man was unarmed, was shot, he went as far in Time magazine to stand up and talk openly about the ProPublica data about a black man in America being about 100 times, if not more, likely to be shot by the police and someone white. And he said, he's shaking his head, if I may recognize, he said that there must be something more going on here if it's that much. So I do not question the sincerity of his convictions. I've had too many conversations with him to question his heart. But I am so raw today, of all days, that we're doing this. Of days that we're doing this right now, having this discussion, when, God, if this bill passed today, what that would mean for America, that this body and that body have now finally agreed? Because I know when Congressman White, the last black person to serve in Congress before the fall, the god-awful fall of the backlash after Reconstruction fell, he gave this famous speech where he talked about the phoenix will rise, that one day black people will serve in this body. And here we are in the Senate making history, the first time three African-Americans have even served together, Republican and Democrat, and we all came together leading on Kamala's bill. And there's something about us that we knew, that it was something more than the legalistic issues that my colleague now wants to bring up. That we were a nation that needed this historic healing. And that if we passed this, it would not only do something substantive to make a difference on the books of the American federal system, but God, it would speak volumes to the racial pain and the hurt of generations. I do not need my colleague, the senator from Kentucky, to tell me about one lynching in this country. I've stood in the museum in Montgomery, Alabama, and watched African-American families weeping at the stories of pregnant women lynched in this country and their babies ripped out of them, while this body did nothing. I can hear the screams, as this body and membership can, of the unanswered cries for justice of our ancestors. Every one of us is sensitive to that anguish. Every one of us is sensitive to that pain, as is the senator from Kentucky. And this week, senator from Kentucky mentioned the colleagues, Justin Amash. I want to tell my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, he was one of only four congressmen of a 435 body to vote against the anti-lynching bill. That means that this bill was supported by the leader of the Democrats, the Speaker of the House. It was supported by the leader of the Republicans, the whip of the Republicans, the whip of the Democrats. 400 plus votes supported this. My colleague thinks that this bill is wrong. If this bill is wrong, then the Republican leadership of the House is wrong. If this bill is wrong, then the Democratic leadership of the House is wrong. If this bill is wrong, 99 senators are wrong. If this bill is wrong, then the NAACP is wrong. If this bill is wrong, then the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights is wrong. If this bill is wrong, then the Urban League of America is wrong. Legal organizations, civil rights organizations, Democrats and Republicans, tell me another time when 500 plus congresspeople, Democrats, Republicans, House members, and senators come together in a chorus of conviction and say, now is the time in America that we condemn the dark history of our past and actually pass anti-lynching legislation. And now one man, and I do not question his motives because I know his heart, one man is standing in the way of the law of the land changing because of a difference of interpretation. This doesn't talk about bruising someone. It's a difference of interpretation. Does America need a win today on racial justice? Does the anguished cries of people in the streets, had children break down with me this week, wondering if this would be a country that values their lives as much as white people's lives. I've had to explain to grown men this week that there's still hope in America, that we can make change in America, that we can grow and heal in America, that we can make this a more perfect union. Well, today is the day we can do it. One thing, one member to yield for once, like he did in February of 2018. 2019 yield for one day and give America this win. Let us pass this piece of legislation today of all days. Let's give a headline tomorrow of something that will give hope to this country that we can get it right. It may not cure the ills so many are protesting about, but God, it can be a sign of hope. So, Mr. President, I object to this amendment. I object, I object, I object on substance. I object on the law. And from my heart and spirit and every fiber of my being, I object for my ancestors.
Objection is heard.
Mr. President,
do you like ads?
I don't.
That's why we created Ad Remover. It's a product that makes it so you never have to see another ad on any website ever.
The Senator for Kentucky.
I think it's important to know and to let the record show that I've been working with Senator Booker's office for 3 months on the amendment to this bill, that I'm willing to have unanimous passage of the bill today. But I think it's incredibly important that we get this right. A woman in New Jersey, a black woman in New Jersey, assaulted three Jewish women and slapped them. It was terrible, and she uttered racial epithets about these Jewish women. She was charged with third-degree misdemeanor assault up to a year in prison, which actually sounds to me pretty significant for slapping. But she was then charged with a hate crime in addition to that. It would be 4 years in addition. So we do have to get this right. If slapping someone and hurling a racial epithet could get you 10 years in prison, this is exactly what we've been fighting about in criminal justice reform, that we set up a system, we didn't pay attention to the penalties, and all of a sudden things we didn't intend it happen. So we have to be smart about this. I'm willing to pass the bill today as amended, which would simply say not that you even have to harm someone. You have to attempt to harm them, but it has to be an attempt to harm them. So all of the discussion about bruising while trying to lynch someone, yes, that's attempted murder, would be covered by this bill. Nothing in the bill would stop, would prevent the prosecution of heinous behavior. That's what it's intended for. What I'm trying to do is to make sure we don't get unintended consequences. We've fought the battle against mandatory minimums for a decade now, because we tie up people in sentencing that makes no sense. 10 years for slapping someone would be an abomination, and it could happen to anyone. Do we want a black woman who slapped three Jewish women in New Jersey to get 10 years in prison? If there was a group of them, it's now a conspiracy to lynch. We have to use some common sense here. We should not have a 10-year prison sentence for anything less than, at the very least, an attempt to do bodily harm. The statute lists what bodily harm is, but it could still be an attempt. It doesn't mean you actually have to have it, but what it would preclude is somebody shoves somebody in a bar and they fall down and they have an abrasion and they say he did it because of a racial animus towards me, and you have a 10-year penalty. That's not right. So all of us here are advocates on the same side of criminal justice reform. We all have argued on the same side that the law is screwed up and has incarcerated too many people unfairly. That's what I'm trying to prevent here. And so the thing is I understand the emotions on it. You think I take great joy in being here? No. I'm sponsor of 22 criminal justice bills. You think I'm getting any good publicity out of this? No. I will be excoriated by simple-minded people on the internet who think somehow I don't like Emmett Till or appreciate the history and the memory of Emmett Till. I'll be lectured to by everybody. I've got no right to have an opinion on any of these things. I should be quiet. But we can't just not read our bills. You know, I have worked in an honest way with Senator Booker's office for 3 months on this bill. We have gone back and forth. We gave them some language. They came back to us and said it wouldn't work. And I said, well, what about this? And then we haven't gotten any more responses. So we haven't gotten responses back in a month or more. And the thing is now they're litigating in the press and trying to accuse me of somehow being in favor of something so heinous that it makes my skin crawl, that it makes me sick to my stomach to even read the accounts of what happened. But we also have to be fair and honest about this. Lynching is illegal. People who are saying there's no federal law against lynching are not telling the truth. The law says if you kill somebody
and you have racial animus under the hate crime statute, it is illegal. You can't do that. It's also illegal in all the states. This bill does not make lynching illegal. So for all the discussion of that, this bill creates a new crime called conspiracy to lynch. Well, yeah, I'm for it. If there's a crowd, let's arrest the whole mob. All four policemen should be responsible for what happened to Mr. Floyd. But the thing is when we do that, we have to be careful that we don't then put a crowd of people in where someone pushed into someone or someone slapped someone. There has to be justice. People are chanting justice. Justice has to have a brain and has to have vision and can't be hamstrung into something that could give someone 10 years in prison for a minor crime. This is a very minor attempt. Everything we left in here, we have worked with Senator Booker's office to make sure it is inclusive. They came back and said, what about attempted? We said, let's change the language. So we have in there attempt to cause seriously bodily harm. So there could be no injury. But someone will have to have a discussion of whether there was an attempt, and it was an attempt that looked like it would be serious. So I think slapping someone isn't. But under the current statute as is, people say, oh, nobody will ever do it. Maybe, but we're putting it on the books. The mandatory minimums have kept people in jail for decades. There are people in life for nonviolent crimes. All of us have worked on the same side of that issue. I'm asking for a very minor change. I'll pass it right now. I'm completely out of the way. I'm for the bill. I'm asking unanimous consent to pass the bill today with one amendment that just says, let's be careful not to arrest people for slapping someone or not to arrest somebody for pushing into someone and get them 10 years in prison. This isn't about someone trying to kill another person or someone attempting bodily harm. Those people would be included in this language even if they did not have a mark on the person. But if they were rounding him up, tying him up, and they'd thrown a rope over the tree, that's attempted murder. And they would still be included under this bill, even without a mark on them. But what we have to preclude and what we're trying to preclude is that the bill doesn't get used for the wrong purposes. We're all on the same side about who we want to punish and who we should prevent. And we're also on the same side on the symbolism of this. But we can't pass laws that do exactly what all of us have said is wrong with our penal system, all the unintended consequences. There is one here. And I ask it in a very polite way. I've been asking for 3 months for one small change, and I let the bill go today. On this day, if we could have it. And the changes have been out there. They're not brand new. They've been in Senator Booker's office for 3 months, and we've tried to, as he's had objections, work with him on his objections. So I would ask unanimous consent once again to pass the bill as amended.
Is there objection? Reserving the right to object?
Senator for Virginia.
Or New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Thank you. No, thank you very much, Mr. President. This is a bill that's already passed this body. Same bill, same language. There's no objection there. Only 4 members of the House of Representatives objected. Same bill, same language. I've heard this objection. We disagree with this. The truth of the matter is, what's being proposed is not just opposed by me, but our Republican colleagues who are sponsoring this bill in this body oppose these corrections as well.
I'm going to stop right here. We're running out of time. Even though we have a little more time left, but I want to come back and talk about the CD called Heart Shines. And there are 7 tunes on this particular disc. The cost is $15. If you're interested, please contact Paul Willis. On his email is pewilusc@gmail.com. And when you do that, give him leave your phone number and then your email address. I hope you've had an opportunity to listen to some of the people who have major concerns about a female that may be in line to become Vice President of the United States. And you just heard Patricia Harris from California, Oakland, California, that is,
a senator and a Senator Booker, working to try to deal with the passage of a bill which is called an anti-lynching bill. And so that gives you an idea that some things aren't in the motion of being used. Rand Paul explains why he is holding up popular bipartisan legislation to make a lynching a federal crime. So you'll have to deal with him. In any event, it gives you an idea where some people's heads are at in a time when their heads need to be someplace else. Because this knee on the throat was nothing more than a lynching. This has been Getting It Done, and I have been your host, Dr. Walter Dean, and hopefully you will have an opportunity to listen to our show once again. I doubt if it will be broadcasted this coming Monday because I plan on being back in South Carolina and I'm not taking my equipment with me. But until then, I will let you know when the next show will go. And we will continue on this type of information. God willing, have a great weekend and enjoy Father's Day. Bye-bye.